Welcome to episode 5 of the A24 podcast. We're back from our summer hiatus and very excited to share this conversation between Ethan Hawke and Alia Shawkat. Ethan recently played a tormented pastor in Paul Schrader's First Reformed, delivering a career-best performance that led Twitter to anoint him the Tom Hanks of A24. Alia is an actress, writer, painter, and musician. She starred in our 2016 film, Green Room, and guest stars in our upcoming TV project, Moonbase 8. Last year, Ethan directed Alia in a film called Blaze, which chronicles the life of legendary songwriter Blaze Foley. Blaze is distributed by IFC, and you can see it right now in select theaters. For their conversation, Ethan called Alia from his island home in Nova Scotia.
Well, how have you been?
Pretty good. Oh, are they rolling? No, we're rolling. I'm in LA in this like very decorative studio.
And what's happening in your life? Like, fill me in, color in the details of where I'm finding you.
I'm in L.A. It's very hot. I just bought a studio. I've been painting every day, and I've been writing.
You're kidding.
Yeah, dude, I bought this weird old grocery store in Highland Park. It's like my treehouse. I just, like, hang out in there. I paint, and I've been writing. Yeah, I'm about to do, like, a short film. So I haven't been acting in, like, a couple months, which has been fun. And, yeah.
And did you write the short film? Are you directing it?
I'm just acting in it. There's these cool writers. There's, like, this young Lebanese couple that I met that I really like. And so I'm going to do this short film with them. But, yeah, this will be the first acting in a while.
Okay, you're now qualifying as one of the single coolest people I've ever met in my life. I mean, this sounds like...
Wait, what? Who's the coolest?
I don't know, like a book. I mean, you're reaching the newer, higher status in my brain, making cool short films with a Lebanese couple that you like. You're living in an old grocery store. Is that what you said?
That's what it used to be. Yeah, it's cleaned out now, though, so it's fresh. What are you doing? I was going to come see you guys north, and then I fucked up. But how's your life?
I know. Well, I've just, I don't think I realized it, but I've had the treadmill on max for a little while, and meaning I've just been doing so many things and bouncing around, and I just took the month, which I've been wanting to do for a long time, and dropped out to our place in Nova Scotia.
Yeah, and, dude, you got to do it.
Yeah, I just had the best time. I finally hung out with my kids and made art projects.
Yeah.
And talked and made s'mores, and we had this thing that we do every morning all summer. We would wake up. I kind of love this. We would take the change that we would find, money. Now, you can't tell anybody this. I know it's a podcast, but yeah. It's technically illegal. But we would put the pennies on the track, you know, because there's a railroad track that runs by my house.
Oh, yeah.
And we would put the pennies on the track, and then, you know, the train comes by in the middle of the night and smashes the coins to Kingdom Come, and it flattens them out, makes all these weird, crazy shapes. And then we take the coins and we make designs. We like glue weird shapes on rocks all over the island because we have this, it's an 8-acre island in Nova Scotia.
Oh my God.
You know, we hide little eyeballs and weird things on the trail, and the kids love it, and I love it.
I love the eyeballs. So, like, when people are walking,
you see, like, the eye of God looking back at you, saying to you, asking you, what are you doing?
I love that.
You know?
I love secret eyeballs.
I know.
That's great.
And now, so I'm gearing up, you know, the movie that we made together.
I can't believe it.
It's kind of, it's a really weird moment in my life where, like you, I try to do a lot of different things because I feel like they fuel each other.
For sure.
And it's the first time, you know, something that I directed, it turned out the way that I wanted it to. You know,
yeah,
you have the dreams of mice and men, and sometimes things turn out kind of like you wanted them to, or almost like, or in a way inspired by something you would have wanted. But so I've had this weird summer where we're releasing this movie that I love so much, and simultaneously First Reformed, this movie that I did with Paul Schrader has been coming out, and that's been...
Yeah, I just got sent a screener of it. It's so trippy, but I feel terrible because I was, like, late for this interview, our podcast, that I wasn't able to finish like the last 20 minutes of it, which is a very weird place to leave off on a movie. So I'm going to be watching that when I get back.
The movie's got one of the strangest endings of all time.
Right. I have a feeling. I left off when you and Amanda Seyfried were like floating together in the air. I'll just leave it at that. No spoiler alerts.
You'll get to it. It's been a great, you know, I don't know what your feelings are, but it's been one of the most turbulent political times of my life. And so to have some kind of, you know, whatever you call it, art to put into the world that you care about and believe in feels a little bit like some kind of balm in Gilead, you know?
Totally. Oh, gosh. I just came in real clear in my headphones. All of a sudden, I turned into God speaking about political events.
You sound like God, and I feel like Noah. And like, you're going to tell me
I'm like, listen to me now. Yeah, I mean, I feel like I keep looking back on films that came out maybe, you know, 10 years ago or whatever, and how I would be able to appreciate them or look at them in just a very different light. And now, you know, I was acting back then, but now when I think about stuff I want to make, especially stuff I want to write, yeah, I can't help but, I don't know, it's naturally affected by everything that's happening. And yeah, there's no way to kind of, there's not really art I necessarily want to make that doesn't have either a lot of this like heavy, or I don't want to say heaviness, but I don't know, some strong truth to it that I feel like we're all feeling on a daily basis. And that doesn't mean it has to be political, but just has to be real honest. You know, there's a different kind of entertainment that I think we're all craving.
People talk about, that's how I feel about anything that tells the truth is kind of political.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I did that Before trilogy with Julie Delpy, and it's on the surface completely non-political. They don't talk about politics at all, and it's just about romantic love. But if you tell a story honestly, you know, politics is about people and what is happening in our lives. You know, the opposite is also true, the inverse, which is if you make movies or write books or do a painting to try to sway a vote or try to have an agenda with an audience, then all of a sudden the art sucks, you know, because it's not art, it's some kind of propaganda.
Yeah.
It doesn't even matter if I agree with the said cause, you know.
Right. No, it's about human experience.
One of the things that's
like,
cool about,
yeah, what's cool.
What's really, you would like this guy, Paul Schrader, because he's really pretty ferocious person.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really only interested in trying to get away from as much artifice as possible. And I don't know, one of the things that, I don't know if I'm supposed to do this, but one of the things about directing you that's really interesting, especially the situation we were in, I mean, you were working with someone who had never acted before. And so many people would see that as an uninteresting challenge, you know? And it was so much fun, Ellie. I've never gotten a chance to say it was so much fun to edit your performance because you're always great. You know, I compare Ben and Charlie, our resident musicians. They're totally inspired artists, and I love them. But you were kind of forced a little bit like what I always heard it was like to work with Marilyn Monroe, which is like sometimes they always used the take that Marilyn was great in. You know?
Right.
Something about it. She was so mercurial and strange and interesting. I remember one of my first jobs was with Jack Lemmon, and he was telling me about working with Marilyn Monroe and saying that you had to be great every take.
Right, because he didn't know which one
was going to use it.
Right.
which one Marilyn was going to come through with her inspired moment on.
That's
you
amazing.
Just had to be great all the time. We never really talked about this, but how old were you when you started? A kid, right?
I mean, I was a kid, I was nine.
Nine, was that in that George Clooney movie? Was that your first movie?
Yeah, I did a Barbie commercial. That was my first gig. And then a week later, I did Three Kings. Yeah, the David Russell movie.
You did a Barbie commercial?
Oh, yeah. Barbie in a Porsche. Picnic in a Porsche. it was me and like a white blonde girl.
I've got to have a link.
I know, it's hard to find it. It's like, it's definitely not on YouTube. I've searched many a stoned night, sadly. But yeah, my first job, like proper job, was the David L. Russell movie where I played like an Iraqi refugee. Feels like a whole other world since then.
Yeah. But I will say it's interesting. You're, I related to whatever this, I mean, this is a weird backhanded, strange, I'm complimenting you by kind of complimenting myself.
Perfect.
Or I'm complimenting
myself. It's a podcast about us,
Ethan. You. I'm not sure what you did.
Come on, it's both of us.
I just really loved your approach to acting, and I related to it, which is that you're completely centered and present all the time. And there's a
we vibed out on that
a lot of the
when we did the when we FaceTimed for the first time, you know.
Yeah, I know. But you know, I have a daughter who's acting now, and there's so much energy coming at women that makes it harder. I think that there's so it doesn't even matter whether you're an actor or not. Women are made to feel a lot more self-conscious all the time, mm-hmm. and you know, I always feel like. You know, that kind of self-consciousness. One of the things I loved about watching Ben in front of a camera is he had no idea what he looked like.
Yeah.
You know, like, for example, he would sit with his legs sprayed open and not know that it was a giant cock shot.
Right.
You know? And he was so unself-conscious and just wanted to try to be true to the situation.
Yeah. And so but, on a trained of like being
know,
like, this is what I do when I look charming. This is what I do, you know, because he had no reference of other
Which so many actors you work with, you catch them, don't you just, you catch them making their charming face. Or,
of course. This is,
or I talk quiet when I want people to listen.
Yeah,
or
smoky eyes.
Or I yell when I want people to be intimidated. They have their like little, their 10 faces they pull out of their bag.
Yep.
And it's some, you know, you always read about this beginner's mind. Thing that I feel like Ben really had, which is, you know, you give somebody a bow and arrow the first time they pull it, they shoot a bullseye because they don't think too much about it. Mm. But you have that too, and yet you're really experienced. I just was extremely grateful to you because so many young actors that I have worked with, the biggest demon in the woods for them is being self-conscious because you grew up with DPs telling you that you look better this way or you should get your teeth fixed or, I mean, I just happened to mention the tooth fix, not because nobody's ever told me to fix my perfect teeth.
God forbid you ever, your teeth are perfect. Yeah, I mean, it's taken a lot of, you know, and as you must know too, it's like, I feel like I have to forget and relearn lots of things. When I think of the way I used to approach an acting role when I was younger, I actually didn't think about it at all when I was young. It was like purely instinctual. And then I got very self-conscious. And then I was like, wait, am I even good at this? And then I had to kind of forget it again, you know? And the thing that I learned the most, I feel like, or try to practice is that you have to be responsive to the people you're working with. And, you know, so on Blaze, it's like with Ben, it was the easiest for me because before meeting him, I was like, okay, well, I'm going to be working with someone. Ethan trusts him, though, that's someone who hasn't acted before. And then when I met him, I was like, oh, he doesn't even, this guy's there. I just had to kind of follow him, you know, and gracefully breathe in his presence. Yeah, it's like forgetting kind of all the stuff, you know, and just being there. And also, I think we were just, like, so lucky. You know, the story was inspired so much by you meeting Ben, too. Because, like, he is the heart. You know, and we were lucky enough that our friendship, like the chemistry, just like made so much sense for there to be a story about love there, you know.
It is, it's funny, like when things are right. I read some interview with Nick Nolte the other day that said that he only learns from things that are wrong because when things go right, it's almost without any effort at all.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, even. I never thought of anyone else for your part. Isn't that weird? We didn't even know each other. You're the first person I thought of, first person I reached out to. You're like one of the handful of people that actually knew who Blaze Foley was and who had the guts to go for this. And it is strange. I've been thinking a lot about this recently where sometimes it seems like our job is to get, nature wants to do everything. It presents us with so much beauty all the time and so much truth and so much interesting that it's really just asking you to get out of the way.
Yeah, for
sure. And if you can just kind of be present and not and not try to work your agenda on something. I think that's what happened with that project. I think its intentions were everybody who came to it. Well, it's a strange thing about money, right? If nobody's getting paid, then you know why everybody's there. And it's a lot more clear. And when you get on some big sets, it's a little confusing because some people are there because they really care and they're passionate, and other people are there because they couldn't get a better job, or some people are there because they really want to get hired again. And so,
and you have to be really appreciative.
When I was a kid.
Yeah, no matter what, you have to be very appreciative. But I feel like, especially on those, you have to remind yourself, like, we're very lucky because we're not having to kind of struggle for any of this.
Whenever you have a job.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember this one young working with once. I said to him, like, why are you playing this? Like, your character wouldn't do it like that. He said, you know, I'm not really concerned with my character. I just want to make sure I get hired again. So I know he refused to be scared. He just wanted to be cool,
right.
You know? And so it didn't matter what situation we were in. He said every line like he was asking somebody to kiss him or something. Yeah.
And did you kiss him? Did it work?
I kissed him every day.
There you go. That's all he wanted, really.
No. And how is your family right now? I always found it was so cool to get to meet your brother, and I know the story of your family. So what do they think about what you're doing?
They're doing really well. They just got a house in, like, San Pedro. I don't know if you know that neighborhood. They're doing cool. My folks came to my studio the other day. And it was funny because, like, the natural flare-ups around parents, like, I'm tight with my folks, but, you know, even as a almost 30-year-old woman, I still act like a child around them sometimes. But it's a very vulnerable, real, you know, space for me. It feels like it's inside my, you know, whatever, my inner child's, like, playroom. So when they come in there, I, like, have, like, my hands, you know, crossed, and I'm like, well, what do you think? Like, do you like it or what? And it was just like I'm coming at them with this, you know, they're like, I mean, yeah, it's nice. And I was just like, but no, you don't understand.
Have you always been painting?
You know, yeah, I have been painting a lot the last, like, 10 years. I have, like, a website and I do shows and stuff. But it's not that I don't try to promote it, but I feel like acting is such a promotion in itself because it's my face. So these other things I do, I just don't... I don't know, talk about it as much. But, yeah, I've always painted. When I'm not acting, all I'm trying to do is get to paint. But I haven't had a space in a long time to actually do it because it takes such a practice and, like, an everyday, you know, routine. But now that I'm in there, it's just it's very addictive. I love it. It's a very different side of my brain that gets to work.
Yeah, I think it goes extremely well with acting. You know, there's a lot of actors enjoy painting. I used to, when I did this movie years ago called The Newton Boys, you know, it was like a Richard Linklater. It aspired to be an Altman-esque Western, and McConaughey was in it, and Vincent D'Onofrio, and Dwight. Yeah, we had a really good time making it, but I only worked about once or 2 days a week, and it was back in the days where independent movies could shoot a long time. It would be like 5 months, and I lived in Austin, and I didn't know what to do with myself. And so I got all these watercolors, and I realized that I was one of the highest paid watercolors in Austin because
you were getting paid for the movie.
I spent a lot more time watercoloring than I did acting, and I loved it.
Yeah.
And it's strangely, it's the way I've, I can connect with my children the best from a young age. If you get people in a room, and my stepdad did this with me and my sister, if you get people in a room painting together, you strangely get to know each other really well.
Yeah, totally.
Things come out when people, it's a little bit like a long drive. Sometimes, you know, when you have a really long drive, you find yourself in conversations that you wouldn't if you were trying to.
Totally,
but if you're painting together, this would happen in our... You know, you're sitting there trying to work on this painting, and through a couple hours of silence, something comes out of it. I have to see. I really want to see your paintings now. I have to come to this grocery store.
You got to come next time you're in L.A. I'll send you some photos too of some weird stuff.
All right, please do.
Yeah. So are you gonna?
I'll be out in L.A. for the Blaze release. I'll be out there.
Yeah.
Soon. Yeah.
Well, I'm gonna see you in New York.
So this, Will you be at the New York opening too?
Yeah, I'll be at the New York one because I'll be out living in New York, working out there now. Come September.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Great. When do you come out there?
September 1st.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
That'll be, Ben and I are going to Locarno and going to show the movie in front of, I think, it's a 6,000 screen movie theater outside in the mountains of Switzerland.
What the?
And so we're going to have to take some pictures.
That's insane.
Isn't that cool?
What is that? That's the coolest thing I've ever heard.
I know. And so we're going to go to Switzerland. I mean, this is the job that just keeps on giving.
I know, for real. It really does. I mean, I had a friend who was in Nashville who sent me a picture of the poster because I know that it's kind of getting released in the South first, right?
Yeah.
Going to New York and L.A. And I've just had some very, like, random people that I know from very different pockets have been reaching out to me about hearing about Blaze. And it's cool. It just feels like it's spreading in kind of a unique way.
That's kind of cool. It's just, IFC they just had this idea that maybe they would start where Blaze worked and where Blaze died.
That's cool.
So it feels right for some reason, you know?
Yeah. Are you ready to direct
again?
Are you ready to direct again?
You know, I don't know. I have, I don't know how you feel about it, but there was this quote I feel like you would relate to. To be honest, it was above the toilet at my house where I grew up. Mm-hmm. My mother had this, like, one of those, it was a framed, beautifully calligraphied picture of Shaker expressions. My mother really liked Quakers and Shakers and that kind of philosophy. And one of the quotes was, "Improve in one talent and God will give you more." And then underneath it was, you know, apprentice four professions to master one. Mm. And I think as I've gotten older, I kind of realized that my real profession is acting. And I really enjoy doing all these other arts. But it's something that I don't want to be a quote unquote professional about it. It's kind of like what you just said about acting itself. It takes so much promotion and it draws so much mental, you get
energy.
Known for it. You get recognized in supermarkets for it. There's a huge psychic toll that it takes on you. It's kind of, people don't really, I'm always going to tell these press people, like, you know, you get recognized more for going on the Jimmy Fallon show than for any acting job I've done. You know,
there's
oftentimes people stop you on the street because they recognize you and people say, "Oh, isn't that flattering?" You're like, "Well, no, because they really don't know the difference between me and Lee Harvey Oswald. They just know that they recognize."
It's a familiarity that's people find comforting, but is also like we're not actually connecting, which is strange.
Yeah. So what I'm really interested in right now is there was something I learned from Blaze that there was so much, we were all in service of each other. You know, people fell in love with Sybil. We all fell in love with Sybil and her story. But she wasn't why we came there. We all came there for the love of Blaze. Mm-hmm. And then this other thing starts to happen where people start just taking care of each other.
Yeah.
And I kind of think that, you know, we're all happy that Ben did such a good job, but the truth is Ben's just happy he didn't let us down. You know, that's how he thinks about it. He felt there was so much artistry being put in to support him that he didn't want to let us all down. I think that when you do work in the service of something beyond your own self-aggrandizement in some way, it feels really right, and it comes out better.
Yeah.
It becomes integrated with your whole life, and it's not just in service of you, but it's in service of your integration with your, think about this. I produced this movie with my wife, you know, so when I get to go to the producer to Locarno, Switzerland, I get to go with my wife.
I know.
You know, it's really fun.
It is really fun.
It makes everything feel in balance in a way, or it has. And so while I love the idea of directing again, I also feel hesitant because I don't want to turn this thing that taught me so much and that I'm so proud of into something that I'm, you know, like chasing it like another shot of beer or something, you know, another high
Well, it seems like as it comes,
part
like
of
if,
why it went well is because. No. Say that again.
Just that it seems like, you know, as things come, because you do these different things, that you approach it when it's calling you, and that means like you're actually ready
when it's
to do it.
You. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think you have to trust the universe. Kind of tells you these things about when, where you're supposed to be. I got this call almost exactly a year ago, where, you know, I got a call that Sam Shepard was really sick and he really wants to try to mount a revival of True West, you know, as soon as possible. And would I want to do it? And I said, yes. And he passed like 2 days later, you know?
Right.
And you feel like, okay, well, I think this is what I'm supposed to be doing right now.
Right. Are you about to do it now? Or you already did that?
Yeah, I'm doing True West with Paul Dano.
Oh my God, so exciting.
No, we're doing it. We start rehearsals fall.
Oh, great. I gotta
come. Won't that be
fun? That'll be amazing.
And, yeah, you have to come.
Yeah, for sure.
And, you know, I think it must be confusing for you, too. I mean, confusing is a negative word, but, like, exciting. You're a strange entity, you know. I mean, I keep wanting to get you, I want to get you and Ben a concert date. I mean, one of my favorite things about making this movie was listening to the two of you sing together.
I know, it's so fun.
And one of the tortures of editing the movie was every time you sang, I wanted it to be in the movie. I just, and, you know, trying to maintain some narrative pull, you know, and not just fall in love with the music the whole time. But
yeah, so much
singing is, it's gotta be a pretty vital part of your life. Are you doing any more singing or recording?
You know, I'm not, but not again for, you know, I guess it's the same when asking you about directing. It's like I'm
going to drag you out, Valiant, to do it.
Do it. Drag me out, man. I'll sing with Ben anytime. He makes me feel, he's a fun voice to sing with. It makes me feel good about it. No, I miss it. I think singing is I think we're so lucky that we get to, you know, acting for me as well has been the thing that's brought me out here or to be able to meet and have all these opportunities. But then with singing and painting and writing, there are these other things that I feel very drawn to in periods of my life. And they have helped me connect to a different side of myself. When I'm singing, it's another very social part of me. But it's, I don't know, sharing my vulnerabilities in a way, like being on stage and having only mainly sang jazz. You know, the whole process of being on a stage and kind of swaying and singing those songs that are usually about like lost loves and pain. And it's so fun. And the whole culture of it, and especially being in New Orleans with the band, you know, with James' band, the Swamp Donkeys and stuff. But then when I'm out here, when I'm in like a painting mode, I just want to for once not be looked at in this way, you know. Just like as a human, I want to be seen, but not in this kind of like, listen to me, you know, watch me. I'm like, I'm enjoying and knowing, you know, that it'll ebb and flow because I do crave it again, but to express myself that way. But right now I'm like wearing the same thing every day, going into a studio, you know, loving the routine that I never get normally in my life. Yeah, and it feels great. But then I'm excited to, you know, switch it again. I think whether we're actors or because we're actors, it's like drawn to this kind of, I like the metamorphosis of the different ways to get energy and connect to people.
One of the things that a dilemma for the life of an actor is that you're also only really as good or challenged as your opportunities.
Yeah.
And some of the other arts provide you with a window to make your own opportunities.
Totally.
And to challenge yourself in your own way. And I think for me, it's been essential to like oxygen. If you're sitting around waiting for people to be interested in you to act.
Yeah, you're screwed.
Especially if you have if you aspire for a certain level of, even a minimum level of quality, it's really hard. Those opportunities, you know, I always try to explain to people, like, there's only about a handful of good movies made every year.
Yeah.
And the idea that they're going to have a part for you and the idea that you're going to get that part when there's so many wonderful actors, it's very hard. It's it's very hard for acting to be as rewarding as it can be.
Totally.
You know, when you act for, you know, a couple times in my life, I've gotten to act for a world-class director and with a part that's really challenging. I remember I once was acting with Keith Carradine, and and he told a funny story about he got a part, he got the lead role in this movie, Thieves Like Us, that Altman was directing, and he just finished it, and he had coffee with Steve McQueen, and he told Steve McQueen, he said, you know, Steve, it finally happened. I got a great role with a world-class director.
Yeah.
And I crushed it. I had a great hit on this character. And McQueen just said, well, it's all over now. It's never going to happen again.
The worst thing you can hear.
Yeah, it's like, well, good for you, dude.
Can't celebrate it long. Yeah.
This is so rare. Yeah, and that's why Keith said that's why he really started taking his music more seriously.
Right.
You know, it's just because that was something he could control, and it gives you an artistic outlet that that you don't have to wait for somebody to give you permission to do it.
Totally.
You know?
I always say that when I talk to, not that I'm the one who knows, but almost for advice for myself too, with other actor friends of mine, when we're in between jobs and yeah, always craving that to work on the best part with the best director. It's like it's not always possible to just create your own work, but to even give yourself the permission that you can to be like, hey, I can write something, whether it comes to fruition or not, to try to, it is about creating different opportunities creatively if you have the time and the opportunity, you know, just like allow yourself to think of different shit.
What you said is really, but giving yourself permission, that's the hardest part, because we all have that little voice that says you're a phony, you're posing.
You're only as good as what other people say. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny to be thinking about Shepard, but I always thought he was the kind of patron saint of actor writers, because he was such a fine actor, you know, and he was pretty successful as a young man, Days of Heaven, acting in a lot of different people's movies and plays. But he really gave himself permission to be a writer and to think like a writer and to be a real writer.
Yeah.
Not just, you know.
Not an actor first or whatever. Yeah.
And I've always, the first time I acted in one of his plays, I was about 25, and I was really like, man, that's the trick. You just got to give yourself permission.
Yeah.
Permission to be an idiot, and permission to fail, and permission to think, to aspire for a lofty ideal.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, you certainly won't be. The great Dylan quote that is uncomfortable and annoying as it is to other people. When you really sit down to write a song, there has to be some part of you that secretly thinks this song might change the world.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Because
if you set limitations on yourself, then how is anyone?
No way in hell it's gonna.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. Why the hell should anyone pay money to hear this song if you don't think it's brilliant? But yet, giving yourself permission to say, you know what, fuck it, I'm going to try. And I think that's why people are so comfortable making money. Making money is this barometer of which you can say, I'm doing well. You know,
right.
I'm doing well because I made money. It's like, I scored this many points. And yet we all secretly know that making money does not make you a good person and does not make you happy and does not make the world a better place. You know, what's mysterious is really what is going to make you successful at being you and me successful at being me, because it's always going to be different no matter who we are.
Yeah.
But everybody loves money because it's a metric they know what it is. Okay, he just wants to make money. Or
yeah, we hang out because we make the same amount of money.
Where you live.
Yeah. Like, as when you're an artist professionally.
Wait, say that again?
That, like, people's shared passions can really bring you together when you authentically find out what, you know, you actually love or something that you're passionate about, like an idea.
Intimacy.
Yeah, that's intimacy. That's exactly. Being able, to be on a set, it's like a camp.
And it's like being in a band. It's like these weird, you can have, I've had it before, like a serious connection that, as corny as it sounds, is a kind of love.
Yeah.
And it actually, wakes you up and makes you glad to be alive and makes you want to get up in the morning. And it doesn't have to be romantic, you know?
Yeah, I think that's a huge lesson. I mean, that's a whole other thing, but a huge lesson that love doesn't have to be romantic to, I think people still get so confused by that for some reason, even though it seems like a very simple fact, to be able to follow, just not get confused by ownership and things like that, because it's still very mercurial in the sense of like, what makes you happy. I was listening to this thing on the radio today that was talking about how they fucked up a generation by being like, find what you love and then try to make money from it. And they're like, now all these kids, we don't have any workers. Like, nobody's in the factories because everyone's just trying to find out to do what they love. And I was like, wait, what are we talking about here? Like, this is crazy. Like, you try to teach them some, you know, philosophical lesson and they're just taking it so literally. They're like, well, someone's got to clean the toilets. You know, I'm like, well, okay, but it's a strange balance. Everybody wants some kind of like call and response, like an answer to things, when you have to kind of rediscover it, which, you know, in a way is kind of like we're acting, what we're talking about. It's like it feels like it's gone when it's over, like Steve McQueen being like, well, it's done now, but you have to rediscover it again. It's about the catch and release, like the constant, like being more comfortable with that than actually catching it. It's like being okay to let it go and then believing that more things will come and just keeping that practice going. You have to do that with your passions or with love, because like otherwise something's going to die if you hold on to it for too long.
It's so strange that way, like, because there really is nothing to achieve.
Yeah.
There's something at work. I mean, we live in a, there's something at work that's so much bigger and more mysterious and more unknowable. And it's our constant desire to like win or achieve something or make something, you know, having even like painting a picture, like you get obsessed with it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, invariably it turns out kind of like you want it or whatever, but then you just have to move on. But that doesn't mean that the obsession of working on it wasn't valuable. It's actually way more valuable than however it finished.
Yeah, definitely.
And I find it really mysterious watching, you know, in relationship to our movie that we did together, it's really interesting watching Blaze the person, Mike Fuller, the person, Blaze Foley, his poem is still being worked out. Mm. You know, his music is still, whatever the poem of his life is still working itself out now in, even though he's gone, but understanding of him and what his impact is on the people around him isn't over just because he's passed. In the same way that people that I've known and loved and things who have passed, our relationship isn't dead. You know, that it's my memories change and I remember things where I change. And when I'm different, the memory becomes different. Does that
definitely
make sense?
Yeah, of course. Also, the fact that we were able to have a whole new relationship or a relationship with Blaze by making it, and now that is coming out, it's going to be a whole other wave of his story still being alive and how it's going to connect to people and then how they're going to want to connect with us about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's just like a whole nother chapter of this still to come.
And we just have to give it all away, you know?
Yeah.
That's what it's like. Life is this continual process of just giving everything away. And so you actually just give away your whole life.
Right.
I mean, your actual being.
Yeah, who else needs
to give that away, too?
Yeah. It'll come back in different forms.
I know. I love this. It's a great, I don't know why it's just heavy on my mind, I guess, because I'm a merciless client, but there's a great, in Shepherd's last book that apparently Patti Smith typed up and everything because he lost control of his hands. You know, he had Lou Gehrig's and he couldn't write anymore, but so he's dictating these things. But the overwhelming sentiment is him kind of looking at this old man, wondering who this person is.
Right.
Who is this person?
Looking at himself. Right, right, right.
This is me. This is the same me that was riding Broncos. Who is me? You know,
right.
What is me now? It's like,
oh, gosh.
Me
yeah.
is all these different things.
I've been reading this book. It's literally called The Taboo of Knowing Who You Are. Having to release you know, I mean, we should start our own podcast about forgetting our identity. But that's a whole other thing.
What was so interesting about being around Christofferson is because his memory is getting so fragile that he actually is becoming a living embodiment of living in the present moment.
Yeah, you know? Totally.
It's literally just
an aggressive representation of it.
Just awake.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember him saying to me once, it's kind of beautiful in a way. Just annoying to other people.
Right, exactly. If you're saying it, everyone else is crazy, you know. Are you still saying?
Well, listen, you know, Alia, the whole time we've been talking, we stopped this. We got really lucky. We stopped this roadside park in Ryan and Clementine in Indiana, and the two dogs are running through this water park.
What?
And they're having a pretty good time, but I can tell from Ryan's expression at 100 yards that she would love for this
podcast you to join
to be
in.
Over.
Yeah. Oh, give her my love. Give her a big hug for me. I'm so excited to see you guys. I'll see you like the first week of September.
We're going
to
see you in New York, right?
I can't wait. Yes. It's been way too long.
And you know, I really want to get you and Ben singing a couple of these.
Dude, you say the word and I'll sing.
I'm going to try to make it happen, okay?
Yeah, as long as Ben's there to play.
Okay.
I'll sing.
Okay, well, we can make it happen.
Cool.
All right.
Bye, Ethan.
To be continued, Alia.
Yeah, for sure. Have fun in Switzerland.
Bye.
All right, later.
Thanks so much for listening. Look out for episode 6 next month. The A24 podcast is produced by us, A24. Special thanks to Doug and Aaron at Robot Repair who composed our theme.